We call the meeting to order. Our next public hearing is subdivision 2006-39, James Henry Johnson. Henry James Johnson.
An application to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district in Indian River 100, Sussex County, dividing 42.11 acres into 38 lots under the cluster development concept, located on both sides of Route 296, 950 feet north of Route 305. I would ask Mr. Abbott if he has any additional comments since this was reviewed by TAC.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the TAC review of February 21st of this year will be made a part of the record. On September the 11th of this year, we received a copy of the restrictive covenants that were sent to Mr. Robertson. On October the 5th of this year, we received a copy of revised deed restrictions. And on October 22nd of this month, the applicant submitted an exhibit booklet and a revised plan. Each of you has received a copy of that, and they will be made a part of the record. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, sir. We thank you. And the chair recognizes Mr. Sharp.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jamie Sharp with Moore & Rutt. I represent Henry James Johnson, the applicant, who's sitting in the first row. Also with me today is Ken Christenberry of Axum Engineering. He's the engineer on this project. He will be here to assist me in the presentation and to answer any questions you may have.
Right, sir.
The name of this development is Johnsonville. It's a proposed community of 38 dwelling units, single-family dwelling units, to be located on 42.11 acres just outside of Millsboro on County Road 296. Currently, this project is located near several projects that have been approved within the last few years. There's been approximately 9 subdivisions which have either received preliminary or final approvals, and they have amounted to 1,874 units, if my math is correct, with an average dwelling unit per acre of 1.4. Our proposal is that we have a proposed density of 0.9 dwelling units per acre, as this is a cluster development, but we feel that it is a superior development to a possible standard unit, standard lot subdivision for this acreage. This development is compliant with the AR1 Agricultural Residential District. This lot is currently, these parcels are currently located in AR1 District. The use will be for single-family homes. There are no proposed special uses or conditional uses or special exceptions. We would propose that there would be 2 double-sided subdivision identifying signs. This is a subdivision which is on both sides of a road, so there would be one for each proposed entrance. All of the lots would meet the proposed height, area, and bulk requirements. And to the best of our knowledge, there are no other applicable additional regulations which need to be or complied with. This proposed development also is in compliance with Subdivision Ordinance Statute Section 99.9C. To establish a record, I'm just going to go through each of these 17 requirements. The first one is that it integrates into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape. Currently, it is the proposed Johnsonville is located adjacent to certain woods, farmland, and single-family homes. To integrate Johnsonville into that subdivision or into that community, we're proposing a 30-foot forested buffer to surround the entire subdivision. This would kind of isolate it from those areas, but also further integrate so there's no problems with homes abutting each other or possible farmland. We have the forested buffer there to protect against any agricultural problems, and also the farm, the woods that it's adjacent to. 99.9C2 requires minimal use of wetlands and floodplains. The only wetlands on the site is a tax ditch, which is located right here. That is to be in an area which is to be maintained and owned by the Homeowners Association. It is to be protected as a wetland, and it will be maintained as such. The only possible change that may affect that is there would be a riprap at the discharge point near the stormwater management pond, which is located nearby. Section 999C3 requires preservation of natural and historical features. Most of the natural features will be preserved on site. With the current plan, approximately 12 acres of forest lands will be preserved, and six acres of other open space will also be preserved. If, by comparison, if we were to use the standard lot subdivision, approximately 10 acres of open space will be left, only seven of which would be for trees. Under the current proposal, I think we have using the cluster, I think we have a much better retention of the natural features of the property. Also, there are no known historical features on the property, but should we be advised that there are some, we are willing to comply with the state's Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs to minimize any impacts on the site. Section 999C4 requires the preservation of open space and scenic views. Again, we are proposing to the retention of much of the acreage for the wooded lots. Currently, this area is being used as farmland with woods in the area as well. Right now, under the cluster plan, about 44.1% of the property will be preserved as open space, both as woodlands and open space. As I stated before, if we were to use a standard lot subdivision, that would leave approximately 25.7%. So we feel the cluster provides much more open space and scenic views. Section 999C5 requires minimization of tree vegetation, soil removal, and grade changes. As we stated before, most of the trees will be preserved. The only soil and grade changes that are being proposed are for drainage, cover over utilities, and for landscape berms. We're also proposing the forested buffer around the perimeter, so that will also help with any grade changes. Section 999C6 requires screening of objectionable features from neighboring properties and roadways. As we'd stated before, we have the 30-foot buffer. There's much existing woods on one side of the project. That will also screen part of the Johnsonville from neighboring areas. 999C7 requires provision for water supply. Currently, we are outside of a central sewer district. Private individual on-site wells will be used to supply water to the property. 999C8 requires provision for sewage disposal. Central sewer is also currently unavailable for this parcel. We're proposing on-site septic systems, and we have received a letter of feasibility from DENREC that is in appendix or exhibit L in your booklet for your reference. There's also been a soil feasibility study for the property, which has indicated that gravity septic systems and low pressure pipe systems are anticipated for a majority of these lots. The restrictions also have in there limitations on where we will have restricted as to where wells and septic units can be placed, so as not to prohibit someone from placing a well on their property, so all the lots are compliant with county and state regulations. 999C9 requires prevention of pollution of surface and groundwater discharges. Again, all the septic systems will be installed pursuant to state and federal regulations. Currently, the property has about 20 acres of row crops that use poultry manure to fertilize. By having homes on the property, we will no longer had the runoff of this manure into the surface and groundwater. And we will also use best management practices to further enhance any surface water, surface water quality. As we stated before, there are two stormwater management ponds, one located on each side of the road, and that will also be used to enhance the surface water. Along those lines, 99C9 requires minimization of erosion and sedimentation. We believe that the forested areas nearby will prevent a lot of the erosion that currently occurs due to the agricultural use, and the permanent cover will also ensure that much of the sedimentation and soil will remain on the property as it's currently, once it's tilled over, it hasn't maybe blown or drained off the property. 99.9C11 requires provision for safe vehicular or pedestrian movement within the site. All entrances have been designed to be compliant with DLDOT's recommendations. DLDOT has also requested that a bike lane be put in, and there is a bike lane located along the entranceways. We also have a walking trail which will surround most of the property. We feel that this will be a nice way for the homeowners to utilize the property to walk around safely amongst the area. With that, we've designed a gazebo area which will have picnic tables. It's enclosed by the woods on the other side of the stormwater management pond. Be located right here, the picnic table. And you can see the walking trail goes all the way around here. Because we realize that this is a development which has homes on this side of the road, and it may be a far ways for people to walk if they were to, say, have a picnic or whatnot, we've proposed 5 parking spaces at the end of this cul-de-sac that would allow for those individuals to drive over there and have a place to park so that they're nearby a picnic area. And this also, we hope to keep this cul-de-sac free and clear of traffic and parking vehicles so that we're compliant with fire marshal codes that a emergency vehicle can safely turn around in the cul-de-sac. C12 talks about the effect on area property values. We feel that the development of quality single-family homes and these recreational facilities and infrastructure will enhance the value of this property, which in turn should enhance the value of neighboring properties. We also have a letter in the exhibit in your exhibit booklet, I believe it's Exhibit E, from Realtor Nick Verrato, saying that he believes that it is also it will also help increase the values of the property. Section 99.9C13 requires preservation and conservation of farmland. Again, we have the 30-foot forested buffer around the entire parcel. The purpose of this is to limit the effect of the subdivision on the adjacent agricultural property. We feel as this forested buffer matures, and there will be minimal impact on the residential properties and on the agricultural lands. There's also a provision in the restrictions which states that the property is located near agricultural lands and that they are to be advised that there is an agricultural use nearby. 99.9C14 talks about the effect on schools, public buildings, and community facilities. Johnsonville is located within the Indian River School District. We believe it will have a negligible impact on the school district, but we are willing to place a bus stop within the community at the school district's discretion. 99.9C15 talks about the effect on area roadways and public transportation. Again, we have offered certain road improvements. We have a right-of-way dedication per DLDOT's request. There's the bike lane outside of the development, and we believe there's a minimal impact on public transportation. DLDOT did not require a preparation of a traffic impact study. 99.9C16 talks about the compatibility with other land uses. In your booklet, in the executive summary under tab 1, on pages 1 and 2, we have listed subdivisions which have received preliminary approval, and as I discussed earlier, most of these are clusters that have a higher density dwelling units per acre than is currently proposed for Johnsonville. It's our position that this is that Johnsonville is consistent with the change in the residential character of this area. This is a developing residential area, and we feel as though Johnsonville fits with this character. You can see on the plan over here we have an aerial view, and on it we have listed and showcased all the preliminary and final approvals which have been granted within the past few years nearby Johnsonville. And you can see there are roughly 9 which are very close to this site. This is a very close proximity within a few miles of this site. So we feel as though it certainly meets that residential character. C17 talks about the effect on area runways, area waterways, I'm sorry. The conversion, as we discussed before, from agricultural use to residential use should eliminate the fertilized agricultural runoff, and the preservation of existing forest cover will enhance the quality of both surface and groundwater charges. We've briefly touched upon this, that currently what we're proposing is a cluster, and obviously this is an AR1 district. Mr. Johnson, had he chosen to, could have applied for a standard subdivision plan. We feel as though the cluster is a preferred option to the standard plan. There's significantly more tree space that will be retained, much more open space that will be retained. We have things such as the walking trail and the gazebo. Forest buffer would be retained amongst the whole parcel. What we have here is this is the standard lot subdivision plan. And as you can see, the only place where the forested buffer is right here, because it's adjacent to agricultural lands. That would be eliminated. Right now we have it around the whole property. We do not have it here. You can also see that much of the forest space in here has been eliminated, and the open space here has been significantly condensed as well. We feel as though the cluster will allow for this area to be protected and also create that forest buffer. And also it allows the community to have some certain amenities, the gazebo, the picnic area, even these parking spaces up here. Walking trails would be eliminated in a typical standard plan. So we feel that the cluster provides much more in the way of amenities and is a much nicer looking plan than the standard subdivision plan. We have also in your booklet in tab 2 proposed certain conditions which we would hope that the commission would consider, and also for the commission's benefit, in tab 3 we have offered a proposed findings of fact which we would also hope that the commission would consider in rendering its decision. I'd like to call Mr. Johnson, if you would. Please state your name.
Hunter James Johnson.
Mr. Johnson, are you the owner of the land that is referred to in the Johnsonville plots?
Yes, I am.
And have you heard everything that I've said this evening?
Yes, I have.
Do you believe that to be true?
And yes.
Do you feel as though this is the cluster subdivision is a superior plan to the standard subdivision?
I like saving the trees, and I'm naming it after my parents, and I think it would look a lot better, and that's a major reason for doing it. Of course, I don't like cutting down trees, and it is more expensive, too, to be honest with you, but I like the looks of it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I'm drawing a blank.
Mr. Christenberry, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Exhibit N is that standard lot.
Introduce yourself.
I'm sorry. Ken Christenberry, Axiom Engineering, Georgetown, Delaware. I'm a registered professional engineer in the state of Delaware. Exhibit N is the standard lot development plan, and there's a data table in the upper right-hand corner of that plan that'll tell you a comparison between the two as far as percentages of open space. So you may want to refer to that in terms of getting an idea of why we elected for a cluster instead of standard lot. Other than that.
Oh, that concludes our presentation. We have nothing further.
All right, sir, we'll see if anyone has any questions for you. And we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Could you point out for me on the west side of the road what amenities are being provided for those folks?
I'll take that question, Jamie. Yes. The amenities on the west side are fairly limited to simply the sidewalks and the bike paths. The reason for that is that entire section is currently in agriculture. So we're going to have a perimeter forested buffer that's planted, but a walking trail through that buffer, I don't think would be much of an amenity because it doesn't go through the wooded areas. So the real draw for the amenities was to put them in those wooded areas and to have them all in one area that is a little bit more remote. That is a reason why we did allow for some parking spaces to make it easier in case folks didn't want to walk quite that far, could easily enjoy that section.
And there's sidewalks that would be connecting the two sections?
Yeah, what we're proposing on our cross section is a sidewalk on one side of each road, so from here to here, and then all the way around there. And of course, this sidewalk ties directly into the wooded trail. The only perimeter buffer where we're adding a walking trail is from here out to this point, because DelDOT has asked for paved bike lanes along the entire frontage, and a bike lane that goes there and ends there and doesn't tie into anything made no sense to me. Of course, DelDOT doesn't really take that into consideration, but it does work fairly nicely tying it into the rest of the open space on the project.
And is there a particular reason why the stormwater management pond on the west side would be close to the road?
The drainage for this is going to be the same tax ditch. So from this pond, it'll be piped under the road to these swales back to this pond. And then the tax ditch. If you look at one of these sheets, shows some topography that may be of assistance. You have a 33 contour down by the tax ditch. The other side of the property has contours that are up at 37, 38, 39, so they're about 6 feet higher, which around here is pretty significant difference. And this side of the property really doesn't have a very good outfall. As a matter of fact, the roadside swales that DelDOT has are more like collection ponds than an actual form of discharge, so we'll probably, in the area of our entrance, be providing drainage for DelDOT, because the best I can tell, they really don't have it right now.
And approximately how far would the stormwater management pond be from the road?
This one?
Yes.
The bike path is contained within a 15-foot easement, and that's, of course, after DelDOT has taken, they're going to take 5 foot of right-of-way, then there'll be a 15-foot easement with the bike path. From there, I believe we'll probably have about a 10 to 15-foot level bench. So from the, you want to know from the edge of the pavement or the edge of the legal right-of-way?
Edge of the pavement. What I'm concerned about, Mr. Christenberry, is that not become a trash collector, and given that, you know, it's still a rural area and people like to toss their trash bags out the window rather than going to the landfill.
Sure.
What kind of methods can you implement that would prevent that?
As far as the distance goes, you have about 15 feet to the existing right of way, another 5 feet, and another 15 feet to the easement. So you're about 40 to 50 feet from the pond to the pavement, maybe a little more.
Okay.
As far as how to discourage people from doing that, I mean, it's a fairly easy to see open pond from at least three homes. So someone, you know, coming in with a truck, stopping and tossing bags out is going to be doing it in wide open view. I certainly hope that would be some level of deterrent.
Are we talking dry or wet pond?
I would anticipate them to be wet. Certainly the one by the tax ditch we're intending to be wet in the open space area. This one, I'm not as sure I'm going to be able to get it large enough to be wet because the Conservation District's current specs, they want to see ponds that are wet be at least half an acre.
Okay. And for the record, I'm assuming that lots A, B, C, and D, and 3 and 4 are not part of the subdivision.
Those were parts of minor subdivisions that
previously did.
Has already sold.
Right.
And
what discussions have been held with any of the other developments that are in various stages of progress in terms of tying into their central sewer system?
We haven't really contacted any of them because the closest one I'm aware of is Atberry, or more commonly known as the Pumpkin Junkin, which is about, it's about a mile away. To my knowledge, they've just applied for another extension to the preliminary approval and haven't really gotten final engineering done. I do believe one of our conditions states that if sewer is provided to our property line, let me read this into the record for you. For water supply, applicants shall use on-site wells unless central water shall become available at the property line prior to filing of the record plat, in which case the applicant shall use central water. And then our third proposed condition is applicants shall use on-site septic systems unless central sewer shall become available at the property line prior to the filing of the record plat, in which case the applicant shall use central sewer. In light of the progress, as I know it, of these other projects, they're very unlikely to have final approvals, a sewer plant constructed, and lines in place before we would be able to get basically a drainage plan approved and then septic permits.
And I saw on one of your diagrams a reference to three different phases. Is that, are you planning to build it in three phases?
Yes, sir. Three phases. The first phase would not involve clearing any woods, really. It would be the entrance and the lots here, about 15 lots, and then the stormwater management lot. Phase two cuts into the woods for the next 10 lots. And phase three is everything on the other side is simply one phase. The entrance work will probably all be done at once, so we don't have to go through DelDOT inspection. Two separate.
And perhaps I missed it, but what type of housing are we talking about for this development?
Mr. Johnson, would you care to address that?
Stick built or modular?
In fact, we have restrictions to that effect. Proposed restriction number 2 states that Johnsonville is hereby established as a restrictive development or neighborhood for single-family conventional or modular dwellings. No single-wide or double-wide mobile homes are permitted.
Are or not?
Are not. So something like a barrico would be permissible, but a double wide would not.
Okay. And I'm going to refer back to the some of the TAC comments, in particular looking at the DENREC comments. There was a reference in there to request for a site visit for their botanist to survey that. Have you been in touch with them?
Do you know which division of DENREC that comment came from?
We're talking about, well, I don't know what page one. It's that? Under the rare species.
Is this the TAC section?
Yeah. So it'll be right after the state fire marshal's comments. You get into DENREC Division of Fish and Wildlife.
To answer your question, we have not contacted them directly. We are open to them performing a site visit to check the site for endangered species. Site visit request.
So you're agreeable to that?
Sure.
And their plant rescue, if that's so suggested. You know, the plant rescue is where they're trying to relocate plants that might be at risk to another project. Not trying to not prevent you from building, but
right. Yeah, the area that's going to be disturbed in the woods is fairly limited, so that would be the area where I think they would need to generate most of their studies is essentially this area right here. Everything out here is already in till, and this wooded this walking trail is not intended to be created with a backhoe. It's just laying in mulch and really leaving that area where we're not doing anything more than removing underbrush.
Now, is the ditch, is that what also is referred to as Swan Creek?
Yes. But it is a tax ditch legally as well. And we will be working with DENREC's Drainage Division to have a reduction in the right-of-way because the legal right-of-way is a lot larger than they need for maintenance.
So it's a tax ditch, not a creek?
Legally, it's Swan
Swan Creek tax.
Swan Creek tax ditch. So I guess the answer could be both.
Okay.
But it is a tax ditch that DENREC has. They work with the tax ditch managers for the maintenance of that ditch.
Because again, referring back to the TAC comments, there was reference to concern about how much buffer you would have in that area, given that you were going to be putting in a gazebo in a little park area.
The intent with that open space area is, again, to limit disturbance. I mean, if the gazebo can be set in the woods without taking out any large trees, having hopefully a nice view of the pond and not resulting in a lot of disturbance. I mean, for instance, one of the reasons that we did not consider a more hard surface open space amenity like a basketball court is that it would probably have to go in an area where we would clear woods to put it in. And these seem like amenities that were more compatible with an area that, an open space area that was already wooded.
It's got standing pine where the gazebo goes. And of course, they have their leaves up in the top part and you can look right underneath.
Okay. And going back to our west side of the road, is there an area that you could set aside as a small park area, picnic area for those folks so they're not having to travel across the road? And
we've got three common areas, but they all are located off of people's backyards, so I'm not sure we want to attract folks to those locations. You know, if the commission felt like that were an improvement, we could perhaps try to maybe put this pond here and put it right there next to the entrance, but I don't know how much of a draw that would be because of the location of traffic. Although there's not a lot of traffic on this road, so that may actually...
Today.
True. That may be something that we
could add.
I have no further questions, Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Burton.
The place you have marked there, it's a common area on the west side of the road. It really isn't accessible to anybody. I mean, how do you call that common area if you can't get to it?
Well, the reason it's common area is because it's not part of a private lot. we've got the lots essentially very close to the number there is additional open space. This half of the project didn't have a large collection of open space that was very easy to work with, so the addition of the sidewalks, the bike lanes, and the walking trails really gave us a good opportunity to tie into the real project amendment. Because this area is already wooded, this was just a natural place to have that feature as well. So what I think these are going to be perceived as is almost part of the backyard of these lots. And I don't know that creating a gathering place in any of those, again, for the sake of the folks that do live there, would necessarily be a good idea or desirable, right?
Would that area be maintained by the community?
It would be, yes.
Okay. What are you proposing for the footbridge going across the...
This one? Mm-hmm. Whatever the tax ditch managers can live with, that doesn't involve putting any kind of piers in the water, because the only wetland impact permit I'd like to pursue would be the discharge from this pond. This crossing actually occurs at an existing farm crossing. There's already a pipe bridge.
Well, to need so access to the pedestrian
bridge. You wouldn't be able to drive a tractor over it necessarily.
What's on that current one? There's currently a...
This crossing here?
Right.
That's how we got the timber out.
I believe the
survey
calls it out as
it's not part of anybody's deeded property.
Metal pipe.
Concrete.
It's concrete. Mm-hmm. No, it showed up on my plan or not, but when I looked at the survey data, it's a 48-inch diameter reinforced concrete.
And that's becomes the footbridge?
No, this is already there.
Okay.
So this trail crosses here, but there's already a pipe.
Okay.
So we don't have to worry about disturbing the ditch or getting another permit for sort of wetland impacts. And here, by having a wooden bridge that spans the ditch, there are no wetland impacts, so there's no federal permitting involved. The question is, what can the tax ditch manager mow around? And that's an issue that we're not going to be able to set anything in there that the tax ditch managers won't accept. So we'll find out what parameters they want us to work with and try to make it essentially something that they can get around without a lot of difficulty with their mowing equipment.
How wide is that ditch?
Probably about 6 foot to 8 foot at the bottom, because it kind of goes in and out.
Yeah, 48-inch pipe, it's a fairly sizable ditch.
Are you proposing, did you say sidewalks and streetlights or just sidewalks?
We put sidewalks in the plan. We can add streetlights if the commission has that as its pleasure.
I have no further questions.
All right, so Mr. Gordy.
Just one. How's the restrictive covenants address the cutting of trees?
There is no provision in there regarding the cutting of trees. There's very few lots that are actually currently within the wooded areas. I think if you turn to Exhibit I, you'll see that there are very few lots which are even which have any trees on them at all. The plan is superimposed on that, so I think there would be some clearing there simply for putting the homes on there. But I think our position is that most of the people are what's going to be attractive to those lots is that they are wooded. So I think that most people are going to want to retain those trees there anyhow as much as possible.
But you wouldn't be willing to put in there something that would restrict that? I mean, because you could get somebody in there that might decide they want a hectare of raking leaves, they want to cut the whole...
No, that'd be fine, because I think we ought to have some. I don't want to, I want to keep as much of the woods as possible. Yeah, that we just hadn't thought of it.
That's all the question I have.
All right, so Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Similar to Mr. Gordy's one, sort of a question about the restrictive covenants, which you have a copy of? That was in there. About 10 years ago, I was invited at the request of William Hurdle, who was then the owner of land that shows on this as Power and Love Outreach Ministries. I walked Mr. Hurdle's land at his request. I became aware at that time of there's a borrow pit in the vicinity, which it shows on here is R&B Hauling in that area. And I've been told, and perhaps there may be people that can corroborate this, that up until 1965, that land was owned by the state of Delaware, operated as a borrow pit. Getting back to the restrictive covenants, is that something that we as a commission can ask to have included, that there is a, an area or in proximity to this? It's not an agricultural use. It's not a...
We've certainly, yeah, we've done it before where there's, you know, if there's active borrow pit operations, we've done it for commercial operations, just, you know,
folks on that. That may be something.
I think the state bought it in the 30s, and then they sold it at a public auction in 65. I guess Hurdle bought it then.
I think it's gone through...
Through other owners,
but yeah. I guess my concerns are not of it being active would be that if people were noticed, so if people were, your residents were in there, they did not complain about,
right,
hey, where did this dump truck come from, or
yeah,
something like that.
Still
active. And is that something that as a commission we could ask the applicant to possibly consider putting a fence along his property in that area to keep trespass or...
There is a standing tree line there, probably about 25 foot wide at the narrowest, and it's real dense.
If you look at Exhibit I, that's the same one we just looked at. You can see from the aerial photograph what is standing there is a fairly substantial amount of wood, but that does butt up to our, you know, this photograph here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there it is. Right
Exhibit
there.
F right here. This is the stand of trees that exists along between the borrow pit and the area in phase three.
I'm holding up just
a
photograph of the woods that are there.
So there are trees there. That also abuts our 30-foot buffer. So if any of those trees are in our buffer, we wouldn't clear them to plant something else. And it would come out 30 feet, but if the commission wanted to see a fence there, I think we could accommodate that as well.
Yeah.
And are you talking about something similar to, say, the agricultural use notice, which simply goes in the deed and says,
right,
by the way, people are farming here. If you don't like that, you may want to live somewhere else.
Correct.
It says in so many words.
The way it's been worded before for these types of things is that there's existing power pit operations that may include, you know,
dust, noise,
et cetera, so that they can't, they're on notice.
I think that could be incorporated into the deeds.
Yeah, that's fine.
And insofar as a fence, I guess Mr. Robertson could be our guide on that if that were something that was a consideration.
I'm not, because I don't know where you want a fence that you can't see through, or like a slack on the fence.
I'm not saying anything.
It doesn't matter, you know.
But just thinking of the welfare of the public, that's all.
It could be a good safety factor, that's true. I don't think they'd walk through there. There's a lot of growers. You pay the penalty if you go in that woods. I like raspberries, but they bite me every time.
Well, thank you. And just a question, your septic feasibility letter addresses 36 lots. We know there's 38.
The initial application we filed did show 36. Mr. Johnson's minor subdivisions that he has, he amended some things, added some land actually right here into the project that was added prior to the public notice being published. And this area, based on the mapping that we have, is an area that would probably be suitable for LPP. Obviously, each lot is going to need a septic site evaluation, and I've even advised Mr. Johnson that with half-acre lots, I advise getting these site evaluations done while I'm doing my construction documents so that my erosion control plan can show where silt fence can protect future septic areas and also prevent a well in someone's front yard from giving their neighbor an undue hardship on getting a septic on their lot, because with half-acre lots, it really pays off to master plan it. And we actually have that in our covenants and restrictions, that the septics will be placed in conformance with my erosion control plan. So we're we're advanced planning that to avoid the headaches that can come if it's not done that way.
That little minor aspect sort of points out some of the superiority of the three-quarter lot option, doesn't it? That you have more available septic area, septic and reserve, more flexibility.
You have less. You have less
strictures.
Pre-planning to. You burden yourself with less pre-planning by just cutting up big enough lots that you don't have to think it through. By using the half-acre lots, you do need to be a little more thorough in terms of your planning. Another thing that is included in the restrictive covenants is all 38 wells in this development will be cased and grouted and pulling from a confined aquifer. Now, they're more expensive to build that way, but the reason that's being done is if you drill a standard well, the closest drain field has to be at least 100 feet away. When you case and grout them, that isolation distance is reduced to only 50 feet. Well, that requirement is restricted in the covenant so that every lot will have to have their wells drilled in that manner in order to allow that master planning to be more effective.
Thank you. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. We thank you, Mr. Lang.
I note in your site plan you're showing a walkway, walking trail within the buffer. And typically, I don't think the commission has approved any walking trails within the buffers.
I believe you'd be talking about this one right here.
Yeah, that one.
The reason for that was to try to tie in the DLDOT mandated bike lane in a meaningful way that would help this phase. Now, this phase residents could simply cross at the entrance and use the sidewalks to get back here. We thought this would be a nice way to add basically circuitry, some variance of people wanting to walk or jogging. That was what.
Well, the reason I stated that was that I don't want the commission to feel they have established a precedent. We get everybody comes in with a buffer, has got a forested walking trail going through it. The other question would be you're also showing in those forested buffers the use of Leland cypress, which isn't real popular with the our agriculture department forestry section. I also question. On your site plan, you're showing Swan Creek tax ditch right away of 80 feet from center line, and then another section being 25 foot from center line. Is that 25 foot the maintenance easement? And if it is, isn't that typically from the top of the ditch bank rather than the center line?
We received Denrec's correspondence on the tax ditch fairly recently, and it actually does quote in their letter that it is from center line, which I thought was a little odd myself. The area where the 250-foot easement is shown is one that we will meet with them and try to have brought down. So these are easements that were originally established for construction, and I think the legal procedure of extinguishing the construction easements and establishing maintenance easements was never followed through on. So obviously that's going to have to be resolved before we come back to you gentlemen for final.
That's all I have.
All right, sir. Mr. Abbott?
Now my question was asked, Mr. Wheatley.
All right, sir. Council?
Just two. One, and this goes with what Mr. Christopher just said, I think it may be resolved depending on what you work out with regard to the tax ditch easements, because it's been my experience that even the gazebo, you know, they won't allow in their maintenance easements. I know of situations that required any structure to be out of that. Anyway, that's something that probably has to be worked out.
Right.
The other thing is, getting back to what Lawrence was saying about the buffers also, I guess on the I'm not sure which way I'm looking at, the eastern side, up in the corner where the tax ditch leaves the property, that buffer needs to be shown all the way up to the corner. I know you show on the blown-up pages that the trees are going to be retained, but it needs to show that and show the buffer going the whole way up along those agricultural lands.
Okay.
That's all the questions I have.
All right, sir. We thank you. All right, gentlemen, you may stand down. We'll see if anyone has an interest in your application. For anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2006-39, Henry James Johnson. For anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2006-39. Yes, sir.
My name's John Davidson. I live at 30281 Holly Mount Road. I own the borrow pit next door. It's not so much that I'm speaking against the development. It's just that I had some concerns that Rodney brought up, one about neighbors complaining about trucks going in and out. We do recycle concrete and then stumps and brush into there. The other concern I would have would be, you know, more houses you get, more children you have. At times, there's water back in there that could be anywhere 10 to 12 feet deep. It's not fenced in. Never had a reason to over the years, but it would be a concern of mine now. You know, if somebody gets in there, they're going to be coming looking at me, I know. Just want to be on the record with that.
Sound like you might want to build a fence, Mr. Davidson.
The other thing, the trees you're talking about down that line being a buffer, actually all those trees are on my property. I'm at no discretion to leave them there. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Anyone else wish to speak in opposition? Anyone on the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to spend the rest of your Thursday evening with us to see if we make a decision. Or you may wish to call the office in the morning. Our next public